Today, as we come to worship, we've also come to remember, because of course today is Remembrance Sunday. As a number of older folk who remember what it was like to live through times of war continue to decrease, and we have more and more younger people who've never lived through that kind of wartime experience, perhaps we start to think that remembering isn't so important. But I want to suggest this morning that there are still some very good reasons why we need to remember. It's important for all of us. In our first Bible reading, we heard that God actually commanded Joshua and the people of Israel to do something to remember the important events in their history. So, why is it important for us to remember? I want to suggest four ideas. First of all, remembering increases our awareness of God, and it encourages us for today and for the future. As Christians, we believe in a God who acts in history, a God who not only created us, but a God who continues to be involved in our affairs, a God who continues to love us and care for us. All through the Bible, but especially perhaps in the Old Testament, it tells us the story of God being with his people, his chosen people, the Jewish people. Throughout their history, over thousands of years, in good times and bad times, in hard times, in times of suffering, in times of war quite frequently, and even in exile. And it's in those hard times that we read that the Jewish people and their leaders sometimes realized that their relationship with God was not what it should be, and that they were not following and obeying God properly. Then we see them together as a nation sometimes asking for forgiveness and returning to God. Times of difficulty and danger, especially war times, are often the times when our awareness of God increases. Wars and major disasters sort of bring us down to size. They help us to realize our need of God. It's in those difficult times that even the atheists turn to prayer. Our first Bible reading tells the story of one of the most significant times when God acted in history to save the Jewish people. By the time we come to the verses that were read from Joshua, then already the Israelites had been led out of slavery in Egypt by Moses, had crossed the Red Sea and opened for the Jews the Red Sea to cross safely with waters coming together again to destroy the pursuing Egyptians. Now Joshua, Moses' successor, following God's careful instructions, led the people across the River Jordan and into the Promised Land. And when they'd safely crossed the river on dry land, just as they crossed the Red Sea, Joshua told them to set up 12 stones taken from the Jordan at Gilgal, where they made camp. And this is what Joshua said to the people of Israel. He said, "In the future, when your children ask what these stones mean, you will tell them about the time when Israel crossed the Jordan on dry ground. Tell them that the Lord your God dried up the water of the River Jordan for you until you had crossed, just as he dried up the Red Sea for us. Because of this, everyone on earth will know how great the Lord's power is, and you will honor the Lord your God forever." So the Israelites were commanded by God to remember and pass the stories of what God had done for them to their children so that the nations would continue to remember. In the same kind of way, Remembering what God has done for us in our lives and experience can encourage us in our own faith. It can encourage us especially when we remember and experience the truth, which we find in Hebrews, the letter to the Hebrews, chapter 13, the fact that God in Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever. The same God who helped the people of Israel, who helped the troops in the Second World War, and who has helped us in times past, is ready there to help us again today. So remembering can encourage us for the day and for the future. Then secondly, remembering enables us to learn from the example of other people's faith and courage. God can teach us through other people's lives. Again, the writer to the letter of the letter to the Hebrews encourages Christians to remember in this way. In Hebrews chapter 11, he gives a long list of those who lived by faith right through the history of the Israelites. And then he goes on in Hebrews chapter 13 to encourage us to remember your former leaders who spoke God's message to you. Think back on how they lived and died and imitate their faith. Probably the most important, significant part of recent history for the Solomon Islands and also for other island countries in the Pacific after the coming of the gospel was the arrival of the Second World War. And during that war, those quiet islands suddenly became a focal point of the whole Pacific campaign when the Japanese invaded and tried to push southwards through the Pacific, towards Australia. But they didn't reach Australia, as we know, because they were turned back on the island of Guadalcanal. I think it's true many people do remember the name Guadalcanal from the Second World War, and some people don't realise that it's in the Solomon Islands, although I'm sure most of you do now realise where it is. I think that until relatively recently, the largest number of overseas visitors that the Solomons had, and it happened lots and lots, they were still war veterans from Japan and from USA. Groups from these countries, as well as Australia and New Zealand, regularly returned to remember. There are some very impressive war memorials there to the Second World War. The Americans have built a most impressive war memorial, which commemorates the beginning of the war in the Pacific, and they've built it on a sunken ship in Pearl Harbor. And there's Philip's picture of the war memorial. It doesn't look like any kind of conventional war memorial that we have here, but very significant for those who were involved in Pearl Harbor. And when I was back in the Solomons in August, I was very interested to see that they too had built a war memorial. It was actually happening while I was there. It was literally being completed to remember the Solomon Islanders who were involved in one way or another in supporting the Allies during the Second World War. And there's the new war memorial, which was literally finished while we were there, to Solomon Island scouts and coast watchers, those involved in the war. Because when the Japanese invaded the Solomons, the Australians and Americans particularly organised a network of coast watchers. And they worked with the local Solomon Islanders. These were the people who were largely responsible for making possible the eventual defeat of the Japanese in the Pacific. This is how the book Lonely Vigil sums up their story. In 1942, Japan held the South Pacific in its grip. But on the Solomon Islands, a handful of men, a maverick crew of missionaries and gold miners, planters and traders, made their stand behind enemy lines. Against staggering odds, they relayed valuable intelligence. In hundreds of daring operations, they rescued Allied airmen and sailors from hostile waters. They helped turn the tide of the war. And those of you who enjoy the musical South Pacific will recognize the Coast Watcher story bit in the end of the musical. It was written about that precise time. The Coast Watchers were kept hidden by a network of Solomon Islands scouts who looked after them and supported them. Of course, it was the Solomon Islanders who could move about and actually carry out operations. And perhaps the most famous rescue, which I'm sure now, again, all of you know about, was the rescue of a young American patrol boat captain whose boat was rammed and cut in half by a Japanese destroyer, but who survived with almost all his crew on two tiny islands very close to where I lived in the Solomons. The captain, of course, was John F. Kennedy, whose story became famous as a book and a film, both called PT-109. That was the name of his patrol boat, the number of his patrol boat. And I first heard that story from John Carey, one of the Solomon Islanders, who was involved in his rescue, and for the rest of his life kept in touch with Kennedy, including the time when he was president, and had letters from him and so on. Without that particular act of courage, the world wouldn't have had one of its best-known modern leaders. There are acts of kindness and acts of courage to remember from wartime. And good things can come out of remembering. In the 1970s, we had a group of veterans from New Zealand who came and stayed with us for a week or two in the Solomons at Goldie College. And they came to revisit the places where they had fought during the war. One of them was an airman who'd been shot down near the island of Vella La Vella, and he'd been rescued and cared for by Solomon Islanders. And he was really excited about his trip back. This time he'd brought his wife with him, and they set out on a long canoe journey back to Vella, and were thrilled when they managed to find some of his rescuers still alive there and still in the same village. And the rescuers, of course, were equally excited and astonished to see him coming back to say thank you. The end result of that reunion was that several members of the veterans group, led by the son of one of the veterans, returned two or three times to build some new classrooms for the village school at the rescuer's village and to say thank you to those who saved his life. Lasting friendships were made through that remembering. And then thirdly, remembering can encourage forgiveness. This must be one of the hardest aspects of remembering. The problem is, of course, that if remembering increases our dislike and hatred of those we were fighting against, then remembering's not going to be a very helpful experience. And yet how hard it must be to truly forgive those who hurt us physically, mentally, emotionally. Two instances of more positive remembering stand out in my mind from the 1960s when I was a student in Birmingham. And the first was at a Youth for Christ meeting in Birmingham Town Hall. The speaker there, for that very, very crowded town hall was the then Bishop of Birmingham, Bishop Leonard Wilson, who during the war had been a prisoner of war in Singapore. And he described the conditions and the ill treatment at the hands of his Japanese captors. And then he told us how, after the war, he'd unexpectedly come face to face with one of those Japanese guards at the camp who had been responsible for beating him. He also explained how he was able to assure the ex-guard, who was very sorry then about what he'd done, he was able to assure him of his forgiveness. The detailed story was very compelling, and you could have heard a pin drop in that hall, which was full of young people at the time. And around about the same time, a group of other students went to see a film in the local Baptist church. It was about the bombing and destruction of Hiroshima in Japan. Everyone was really shocked by the extent of the damage and the suffering caused to so many people, and suffering that continued, of course, well after the end of the war in that case. But what totally shook the people who'd gone and watched that film was the way in which, at the end of the film, a Japanese student who was present stood up and asked forgiveness of everyone in the church for the way in which the Japanese had behaved during the war. Everyone left that church very impressed and very thoughtful that evening. And in both instances, the bishop and the Japanese student, they were people who were clearly following Christ's example, the example of Christ who, even while he was suffering the physical and mental pain and humiliation of death on the cross, was able to pray for those who were inflicting that pain. "Forgive them, Father. They don't know what they're doing." I wondered at the time, and I've wondered many times since, if under similar circumstances, I would honestly be able to forgive. Well, certainly not in my own strength. By God's grace, maybe. And then fourthly and finally, remembering reminds us of sacrifice. Often during wartime, it's the sacrifice of young men and their families who feel the loss most. Young men in two major world wars have given up their lives for freedom, which we have today. And unfortunately, that is continuing to happen in different parts of the world today, as we know. In John chapter 15 and verse 13, which we're reminded of in our second reading today, the words of Jesus were, "The greatest love a person can have for his friends is to give his life for them." As we remember the sacrifice of those who lost their lives in wartime, and we continue to do so today in places like Afghanistan, we also remember that Jesus, when he was a young man, sacrificed his life for us on the cross. Jesus clearly knew before his crucifixion what was going to happen. The crucifixion was not just an accident, it was a crucial part of God's plan of salvation for us. Jesus warned his disciples several times about his coming death, and he told them specifically that he would give up his life. Nobody would take it from him. He would do it, and he would give up his life. In the garden before his capture, Jesus asked God, his Father, if possible, to spare him this time of suffering. But at the same time, Jesus agreed, "Not my will, but yours, God's will, be done." And in the first letter to the Corinthians, Paul reminds us of Jesus' instruction for all who follow him, that we should actively and regularly remember Jesus' body broken for us and his blood shed for us on the cross to mark a new covenant between God and his people. And this is what we do, of course, every time we have a communion service. We remember Jesus' sacrificial death on the cross for us. In times of war in many parts of the world, in the past and still today, people have sacrificed their lives to enable us to enjoy our freedom and our way of life, which we still enjoy now. Jesus sacrificed his life on the cross to enable us to enjoy freedom from the consequences and the power of sin and death. By his sacrifice, Jesus opened the way to eternal life for us here and now, and for those who died in wartime and have gone before us into God's nearer presence. So let us remember all these sacrifices today.